Hey guys, I want to take a few moments to thank Sneak Tech Sneak Boots for their support of the show. They make it possible for me to keep it free, so please go check them out at sneaktech.com. I use them on all my hunts, and really they've upped my game, taken my stalks to the next level, so check them out. I also want to take the time to thank you, my listeners, for the support that you have given me, and I'd like to give back to those going that extra mile. So once a month, I will be giving away a pair of Sneak Tech boots and two t-shirts to three subscribers of the podcast who have left a comment or feedback on iTunes or Podbean. Thank you. Now let's roll into the next episode.
Hi, welcome to the Interviews with the Hunting Masters, brought to you by Phoenix Shooting Bags and Sneak Tech Sneak Boot. Today, we're going to do a little campfire session, a little storytelling session with Remy Warren. What's going on, man? How are you?
Yeah, really good. I actually just got off the Rubicon Trail, so spent a few days out there. That was awesome. And, now just getting back to the grind.
Were you were just doing it for, what, like hiking, camping type deal? Or?
No, actually taking Jeeps through it. It was pretty cool. It's just kind of near where I live, and my grandpa done it forever, doing like Jeep Jamboree things, and then my dad did it, but I've just never had the opportunity to do it. So kind of had the opportunity this week, and I took advantage of it. It was fun. It was awesome.
Yeah, I got a couple of friends of mine that go up and do that every year. Yeah, they love it. It's funny because I love hunting and everything, but I don't really enjoy off-roading. I cringe taking my expensive truck down the freaking road, down the road that I do. And I just don't like getting tossed around like a rag doll,
Yeah, that's the thing. Like, that's kind of why, I don't know, I've always just had like the hunting rig, because 90% of the time you're trying to, it takes a lot. Well, at least like in Nevada, a lot of places I hunt, you have to do some considerable off-roading just to get to where you're going to start hiking from most of the time. Mm-hmm. So, now like those Razors or Rangers or stuff like that, it's just the way to go. Just tow it out there and then you can get in a lot easier without beating the heck out of your truck.
Yeah. No, I've considered getting myself one. It's just financial thing. I can't like see spending $20,000+ on, because I mean, if you buy one of the, $7,000 or $8,000 ones, you don't get the ride that you really want. And I'd rather ride a quad than have that kind of a, side by side.
Yeah, definitely.
The really nice ones are like, shit, could buy a damn Jeep for the same price.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, for sure.
Pretty crazy. So, did you draw any good tags this year?
I got a few good tags. I drew a sheep tag in Alaska, so I'll be going up there for that. Pretty much my main hunt this year. And then I got a deer tag in Nevada and an antelope tag. So be looking forward to those hunts. The deer tag is not in any special area or anything. It's just one that I could get, kind of like a last choice draw, but it'll be fun. But always fun to do that hunt. And then the antelope tag, I'm excited about. Probably won't spend a lot of time hunting it, but antelope for me is one of those things, like, it's extremely fun to do for a few days and shoot one and just have a good time with it.
I love antelope hunting.
It's a lot of fun.
I think especially as a bow hunter, I don't think I would enjoy rifle hunting them. I never have, mainly because they're not hard to find. If you hunt here in Arizona, you might have a little hard time finding them because there's densities real low, but you go to Wyoming or something like that, and I guess it becomes looking for the right one if you're rifle hunting. Bow hunting, I'm not so picky, as long as it's mature, I'm not like, but I think they're super fun because it's like constant stalk after stalk after stalk. It's like, okay, got busted. Let's go to the next one.
You get
busted from a deer that you spent 2 hours crawling into and you're like, blew him out of the damn out of the basin or whatever, you probably won't see that deer again for a while. And, you know, it's not like worth antelope hunting. I feel like
you get, like, they're out all day. They don't go bed under trees.
Exactly. It's like it's a numbers game, you know?
Yeah.
More stalks you get in, that's why I like it. It's real fun. I've always enjoyed it.
It's a lot of fun. I will say, though, I think rifle hunting them is almost tougher than bow hunting them sometimes, because you're right. You're just looking for that one big one. That can be tough.
Yeah.
But when I bow hunt them, I don't really care. They're all kind of the same to me. So I just find a nice looking one and stalk it. And then if I get the messed up, another one. But on this hunt, I'm going to spend a lot of time scouting and probably look for a real good one. Either get a good one or a small one on the last day.
I know that. I know that one. So I got you on today to share with us some stories. What would you say your most memorable hunt is, and would you share it with us?
Yeah, I'm trying to think. I've got just a lot. It's kind of like I have to rack my brain on which of my favorite hunts would be the story that I want to tell. Got a lot of, I think about it. Oh man, that's actually a really tough question. I should have thought about it a little earlier. because there's a lot of hunts that really stand out to me. I've always really liked sheep hunting. So probably my desert sheep hunt, the first time I had a desert sheep tag, that's kind of a interesting story. I actually drew the tag when I think I was 15 or 16.
Oh, wow.
In Nevada. And part of the reason that I drew the tag is because there was a major die-off in the unit and there weren't any sheep in there.
Oh, wow.
So my thought was, oh man, I was just extremely excited to draw that tag. The first sheep hunt I went on was with my dad. I think I was 11. And he drew a California bighorn tag in Nevada. And then he took me, my two brothers with him, and we just did the whole hunt. And we were right by his side the whole time. And it was just so cool. I thought, oh, man, I really want to do this. And then I didn't realize – well, I mean, I realized, but – yeah, you got to draw the tag first, and that's probably not going to happen in a long time. So as soon as I started applying when I was 12, I was just putting in for any area that had better odds than the next one. And so I drew that tag after there was a pretty large scale die off in there, just from drought, water sources drying up. And then I imagine they got some kind of pneumonia, but I think then it was mostly because of drought, like no water, guzzlers were dry, everything was dry. So what didn't die had moved out of the area into neighboring units that still had water.
Got it.
So I that tag too was kind of interesting because it was on the Nellis Air Force Base. So it wasn't like you could go in there and scout. You had to go through kind of like a debriefing meeting and get like a special badge, and then you could go in during the season. But it was a month-long season. And it was I thought it was pretty cool at the time because my dad knew how important it was to me. So he's like, you can miss school for the entire season if that's what it takes.
Oh,
like,
wow.
We'll hunt the entire season. And it did take the entire season. So we went out, got down there opening day, just super excited to be there. And we go out and you do your debriefing. It's like, don't pick up any ordinances. There's unexploded bombs. You can't stay in this area. You can't go in this area, because they were still doing like testing. So we'd be up sitting on the mountain glassing, and you'd watch these planes come in and just bomb these tanks. It was pretty cool to see. You know, you're like, well, I'm not seeing any sheep. I might as well check out what's going on over here in Area 51. You know, spotting scope
right.
Out. Just it was pretty neat to watch that kind of stuff. But Yeah, it was a tough hunt, and that's part of the thing that I remember most about it. We were pretty much committed to the whole season, but, you know, being in school, we had Christmas, it was in December, so we had that Christmas break, like a couple weeks off.
Right.
And I took kind of a week off before then when the season started. Well, we hunted and hunted and hunted and glassed and glassed and glassed and didn't see a single living animal.
Oh,
and not just for a day, for weeks. So imagine being in an area and not seeing a single living animal. On day 13, I saw the first live animal. And it was a kit fox. I was pumped to just see something alive. It took its toll on me, and especially being fairly young and just so excited, I just wasn't going to give up. But it was pretty hard to just sit there and glass all day. I actually glassed so hard, and then I didn't have very good, like, optics weren't as good as they are now. Like I ruptured blood vessels in both my eyes just glassing so hard, trying to find sheep. So my eyes are bloodshot. You know, it just looks like there is no whites left of my eyes just from glassing. So much strain from the binoculars and stuff. Yeah, and it's one of those things, just like, okay, persistence, persistence, persistence. Well, we ended up not seeing anything, and then our only stipulation was my mom made sure that we had to come back for Christmas. So we're like, okay, crap. So it's like, we're like, okay, we hunt till the last minute we can. We jump in the vehicle, and we're like, we're going to drive back home so we can make it back, you know, for Christmas. So we're driving through the night. But for some reason, the truck heater didn't work. So it's actually pretty, like, it gets pretty cold in Nevada. A lot of people think, oh, it's like because I was hunting down by Vegas. Well, it's an 8-hour drive, 9-hour drive back to Reno through the night. And it's extremely cold. Well, not only did the heater not work, but it was just blowing that cold air in through the floorboard heaters. Like, you just could not stop it. So I could block mine, but my dad needed to drive. So he's driving. He's like, man, my feet are freezing. So we get back, and it turns out my dad got frostbite from driving home. Just the cold air constantly blowing on his foot. It's like, that's how dedicated he was to just make sure we get back. So he like got frostbite on his pedal toe, on his right foot, his big toe.
Unreal.
He's like, all right, some of these hunts you think, oh, yeah, you're out there camping and whatever, nothing happens, and it's the drive home in the middle of the night you get frostbite on. So then we do our thing. Then the next day we load up and go straight back down there. And we get down there, and same story, no sheep. Well, there's actually two tags in the area. And the other tag holder was a little bit older. We'd run into him, and he really hadn't seen anything either. He might have seen some ewes in there at some point at a different part of the unit, but that was pretty much it. So it gets down to the wire. I think it was the last day of the season at this point. You know, we're in about 20-some-odd days and had seen zero sheep. And we were actually glassing one area a little further south, and here comes the other tag holder driving down the road. He's like, hey, I just watched a band of sheep come in the unit. There's nothing big in it. And he's like, if I shoot one, then I have a 10-year waiting period, plus then another 10 to 15 years to draw. He's like, I don't have enough time in my life to get a tag again, but if I don't shoot one, I can apply it again in 5 years. So he's like, if you want to go after him, all yours, man.
Oh, wow.
And, so I was like, hell yeah, I'm going to go after him. So we rip up there, park, and we see him just going over the ridge into this little canyon maybe 3 miles away. So we decided my dad was going to stay there in the flats, and then I was just going to go up the mountain by myself. And that way, in case they moved, we would know, because they were on the move. They were just moved in from a neighboring area, and it's like, all right, are they just going to keep wandering? And I get it. By the time I get over there, I'll never know where they're at.
Mm-hmm.
So I work my way up the canyon, climb up the mountain, and start peeking over. It's like one of those mountains where there's big, big draws, just typical desert sheep country. Almost, it's like big steep mountains and then lots of cuts in it, you know,
okay.
And then fairly
yeah.
steep. So you can't, once you can see stuff from afar for the most part, but once you get in it, there's too many little rises and drops, and it takes a long time to work your way around and navigate through to where the animals are at. Because if they just go right. one more canyon over, well, now you've got to, like, try to figure out a way to physically get to where they are. Most of the time, like, going up and around or dropping down and all the way back up. So I was hoping that they were still there, but I couldn't – once I started moving in – you kind of lose that perspective that you had from further back.
Right.
So I just keep working to where I last saw them, but I do not see them anywhere. And I'm slowly just working. I'm going to drop down and maybe go into that next canyon. As I'm working around the rim, there's a pretty good cliff below me, and I see all the ewes. And there happened to be a ram, like a small ram, in the band. I think it was probably they were pretty close. It was probably 100, 120 yards or something like that. Maybe
oh, wow.
200 yards, not really sure. I knew such thing as rangefinders then. So, and I was rifling. Yeah. I had a 240, like I had a model 70 243,
okay.
Or model 7, a Remington 700, like 243. And yeah, so I was like, okay, well, one of the ewes looked up and saw me, and then they just start taking off. I'm like,
oh
crap. You know? So it's ewes following up the cliff on the other side. And then the ram, I'm like, no ram. And I look down and the ram's still standing there. He just like stepped out from below a ledge. I think I actually had to shoot him offhand. It was like 100 and it was probably 100 and something yards, you know, but I knew that
right.
there was no way to lay. I went to go sit down to shoot and it was too low. Like I couldn't see him. So I just stood up and shot, and then he ran down and started tumbling down the mountain. I'm like, oh, sweet. I got him. You know, it's like perfect. This is awesome. So I'm pretty pumped. So I radio my dad, hey, I shot the ram, you know, mine's come up and we'll pack him out. And I was like, I'm just going to sit here and watch and just make sure nothing happens.
Right.
So I look and I can see the ram on his back with his legs straight up in the air. So I'm like, oh, cool. Yeah. So
that's
I wait for
good
a while.
Indication. He's done.
Yeah. You know, I'm like, perfect. This is great. So, and, you know, you got to realize I'm 15 years old. Like, I've hunted a lot, but that was the first sheep hunting experience. You know, I've only shot a few deer by this point because you can only have one deer tag a year. Shot a few deer and a couple elk. So I just, you know, my dad's like, whatever you do, just don't take your eyes off of it. I'm like, yeah, cool. Sounds good. He's like, wait until I get there and then we'll go up. He's like, but if it's dead, just go ahead and walk up to it. Cool. So I'd sit there for 30 minutes. Ram's still there. I'm like, all right, well, I'll just start walking now. But it's super steep, like lots of cliffs.
Mm-hmm.
So I start working my way down, going from little cliff band to cliff band, and I drop down. I'm kind of on the last little cliff above him, and I can see him right below me. And I kind of go to look over. He's maybe 30 yards straight below me. And as I look over the little edge, some rocks roll down. One of the rocks like rolls down and then hits the sheep. And when the rock hit the sheep, he rolls over, gets up on all fours after upside down for 30 minutes, legs in the air, and starts to run off. I'm like, oh, shit. And I didn't have a bullet in the chamber, so I jack a bullet in the chamber, and he runs around this point, and I just go as fast as I can to the edge of the point, and he goes around the corner, and I just throw the gun up. He's probably 60 yards running, and I shoot. And he falls over, just tumbles down the mountain, and is now dead. But I thought I was going to lose it. Like, you know, you've hunted for 20 days, you haven't seen a single living animal, you shoot one, you watch him lay there forever upside down, you go to it and he just rolls over and runs off. And man, yeah. And so luckily I hit him great that second shot too. I don't know what happened the first time, why he was, it was a weird deal. It was almost like his horn was caught or something, and he just was upside down for the first time. I don't even, still to this day, don't know what happened. But I was pretty panicked at that point. So then we worked down to the sheep. My dad ended up coming up with the packs, and we skinned him out for a full body mount. It wasn't a very big sheep, but I was like, this could be my only desert ever. And I'm 15, yeah. So I'm like, this is awesome. So we skinned him out and then packed him, maybe, I think it's probably about 4 miles back to the truck. Wow. But it was that hunt. I was like, I love the sheep hunting thing. I just got the sheep fever, as people call it. And I was just fortunate to be able to have that experience at a young age, even though I didn't see anything. That hunt kind of just describes my personality and the way that I am still to this day. Like, I can go into an area, and even if I'm not seeing anything, the hunt doesn't suck for me. I'm just having a great time. I'm just happy to be there because there's still a chance. It was fairly easy to draw a tag as far as desert sheep go. And my thought was, as long as I have a tag, I have a chance.
Exactly.
And it worked out.
Exactly.
It was probably one of the toughest hunts I've ever done in my life, though. Because that mental, when you aren't seeing shit, you feel like everything you're doing is wrong. And there's just, sun up to sundown, you're just thinking, okay, and you just keep looking at different country, the same stuff, whatever, like, am I ever going to see anything? And yeah, it was pretty mentally taxing. Like, I would think that that's still to this day probably one of the toughest hunts I ever did, just because, you know, that tag meant so much to me. You built it up, like the excitement level, so much, and then to just maintain day after day after day after day of not seeing any even living animals, it was pretty rough. It was pretty hard. It was a hard hunt. You know, I was like glassing so much that my eyes are bloodshot and aching, and it's just, I put everything I could into it. And yeah, but it taught me a lot. It was one of those hunts that I always think about when I'm like thinking, oh, this hunt's not going that well. I think, you've done worse.
Yeah, for sure. I've never had anything where I went 20 days without seeing something. I've gone 7 days. I went on a moose hunt where I went 7 days without. But I saw other animals though. I just didn't see any moose. And I can't imagine, not seeing anything, getting excited over a fox, right? That's crazy. It's like,
yeah, it was nuts.
You would never get a 15 year old to do that nowadays.
Yeah, no, that's I've always been that into it, but those 20 days were cool to me because at least I was out, I got to be out there hunting. I didn't really care. I wasn't ever gonna, I'm never the type is going to say, oh, let's just bag it, this one sucks. Which probably a lot of people would, even not 15 year olds, they'd be like, yeah, this is a shitty hunt, let's just bag it. For me, it was, I was still pumped every day, and every day we'd wake up, hey, this could be the day. My dad, actually, the more impressive thing is my dad was there the whole time too. He's just like, we just had to do it together. And it was a tough hunt. It kind of sucked, but it was one of those hunts that I'll remember forever for sure.
Oh.
And the other thing is, it just taught me how sweet that success was of just sticking to it and not giving up. I don't know.
Oh, yeah,
it was one
that,
of those things that,
that
I just,
better.
It made it that much better. And it's like, okay, it wasn't a big ram. I mean, it was a young sheep. It was pretty much, it was literally the only ram in the unit, as far as I knew. But
how old was he?
I think he was like a 4-year-old ram, 5-year-old ram. He scored probably 130. Real small.
Yeah.
But, I mean.
I mean, 130.
When you put.
130's not bad for that age, but yeah.
Yeah. No, he had pretty good bases. You know, I mean, it was like a decent looking ram. Maybe 135. I can't remember, but I didn't give a shit.
it didn't matter.
Yeah, no, it was more like I'm mounting this sheep because I worked my ass off for it, and that's a hell of a trophy. Like there's guys that go out on sheep hunts and they just drive their truck up and the first day they roll out and they have their pick of rams and they shoot a 170 ram and it's like that's yay, I'm a big sheep hunter. And for me, I was like. Yeah. That's bullshit. That's not even a hunt. Like when you go 20 days without seeing a ram, come talk to me. Like that's a hunt. And I loved it. I loved telling that story. I loved having that experience. And it was cool to be successful. And for me, it was like, that's a trophy because the trophy for me at that point was the hunt. It was the challenge. It was putting in that time and being successful till the, like, going till the bitter end. I'm pretty sure it was either the last day or the second to last day of the season. So it was pretty bleak.
Rough.
Like I'll never forget spotting that kit fox. I about lost my shit. I was so excited to just look over and hear this thing popped out of a hole. And I never seen a kit fox ever in my life either. So I was like, all right, not only did I see something, I was like, yes, there's animals, there's living things here. There is hope. If I can find a kit fox, which are pretty nocturnal, I should be able to find a sheep if they pop up at some point. But
that's nuts. Did that unit ever come back? Or?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That unit come back strong. You know, before I had that tag, it was probably one of the best units. There was a genetic of white desert bighorns in there as well at some point in its history. Which, yeah, you know, so before you just like talk to people that have had the area and look at pictures and of people that you know that have been in there. And there was a woman the year before, 2 years before, that shot a pretty good size white desert bighorns, like a 150 type, but maybe even bigger than that. Pretty much pure white. Not albino, like its eyes are still normal color, but definitely dull sheep white. They're pretty cool. I've only seen a few of them. I actually saw a picture of one on someone's, I think it was Victor Trujillo's Instagram recently or something.
Okay.
I kind of wanted, I might have to ask him where that was taken at. Someone, I think that's who posted it, of a white desert bighorn. But yeah, I think I haven't seen one in recent years though. So I don't know if after that die off, they kind of went out of existence or if there's still a few running around down south there.
Interesting. I never even heard of that.
Yeah, it was pretty rare, but there was for a few years there was one shot every year, every other year in that area, or at least seen, you know, people had seen them. I think one of the water holes in there, people kind of called the White Ram water hole because it was kind of the spot where they would hang out.
Gotcha.
But yeah, you'd think with as many tags as they have now and as many guys that really get after it and just how much better optics are and everybody's got trail cams, this, that, and the other thing, you think you would see a few more of them now, but it seems like they kind of went along the wayside there. I don't know.
Yeah, they're probably like you said, probably in that they died off in that. You know.
Yeah.
Because typically genetic, you know, stuff with genetic differences like, you know, white or piebald or stuff like that usually typically are a little bit more susceptible to, you know, disease or drought or whatever. I mean,
yeah.
I don't know that to be true with the white ram. I had never heard of them, but I know, and you know, and deer and stuff like, and elk, they typically, it's not the stronger, you know, they don't carry the strong gene, so to speak. But no, that's cool. I'm going to look into that when I get off with you. I'm going to see if I can pull one up on the internet. I'd see what.
Yeah, check cool it out.
Story. Yeah, I had a similar experience with you as far as hunting on a bombing range in Air Force. I had my sheet tag here in Arizona was on Yuma Proving Grounds, and the same shit. You know, had to call in every morning and get clearance and tell many people I have with me and where I was going to be hiking and da 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 da. You can't camp out there. You have to go in and out, go in and out.
Oh, yeah.
So,
and then you probably couldn't feel, I saw your video of your sheep. That was cool. The did on there, like, because we had trouble. We were just for like personal use, you know, whatever, but they were like, yeah, you can't film on this section, certain places you couldn't have cameras. It's kind of weird.
Yeah. So I spent I don't know how many months. Well, from the time I found out, which was what, in July to July to like November, I did a shit ton of scouting on the YPG. And, I picked out a couple of rams. I had things working out for me. And then I find out, you know, not even like 3 weeks before my hunt that I can't film. And I was like, well, that just like ruined it for me. I was like, now I got to scratch everything I've done. Now I got to go. There's still like 20% of the unit or something like that was like BLM land that, you know, wasn't occupied by the base and had sheep. So I kind of scratched that and I went and I started, you know, I made two more trips down there to scout. Luckily, one of my early scouting, my earliest, one of the fish and game officers, a friend of mine, Richard, he took me to a couple spots that were BLM and showed me where some sheep were at. So I kind of had a leg up a little bit in that stuff. But the problem was the higher quality sheep or the higher age group or the older age classes, I should say, were on the base itself. And it made it really difficult to find that class 4 ram with, you know, a nice rack on his head, but it's just,
yeah.
You know, so my goals changed. So I went from like, oh, you know, I kind of want, I was like in my head, I was like, I want to like a 160 ram, you know, I want to this and that. And I want to get on film. I want to do it with the bow. So then it went from, you know, inches. It went to, I want it to be at least eight and a half years old. Still want to do it with the bow. Obviously still want to get on film. So I just, you know, I switched gears and, it only took me 3 days to kill a ram, but and honestly, that itself was the biggest kick in the ass out of all of it. It's because I did it so quickly. I felt like I cheated myself on the experience. I wasn't upset with a ram. I mean, he's a good sheep.
Yeah.
But there was better, and the ram that I missed the morning before, was a better scoring ram and a little bit older ram. It happened to be one of the few that I had picked out for my scouting too. This sheep I hadn't really seen before. And I got out there and after I killed this ram, I felt like, man, I felt like cheated, you know. I'm like, I had a whole month and my wife already gave me the hall pass. She's like, you know, I know how important this is. I know it's a once in a lifetime deal. You can't ever draw it again. Can't ever put it in again. You know, so take as much time as you need, just be home for Christmas. It's basically the same scenario as you. And I was like, you know, 3 days into it, I kill a sheep and I'm like, oh man, I feel like I could have gone a little bit longer. And then, you know, I've talked to people and they're like, oh, well, you know, you could have went the other way. You could have been out there for weeks and weeks and not seen one or not gotten in close enough. And then, you know, so,
oh yeah,
I made my piece.
Yeah, if I had a do-over and was like, you can get a ram with your bow in 3 days, I would take that option.
Yeah.
You're like, awesome. That's great.
I know. Everybody's like, I can't believe you're complaining. I'm like, the hardest thing is to get the damn tag anyway. Well, I'm like, ah, it's not, I'm not complaining. I just feel like once you don't, people don't really grasp. I mean, I'm sure, you know, many guys have drawn limited entry hunts or whatever, but you have an opportunity to get that hunt again. You know, it might take you 10 years, but you get it. This is like, you're never going to get this again. I mean, yeah. I guess I could draw in Nevada. I could draw in, you know, Utah, I guess, or California, but, you know, or go to, if I strike at Richie, I might go to Mexico. But,
yeah,
you know, it's like, it kind of weighs on you. I feel like it's like, man, you don't want to fail the experience. So it's like, I don't know.
Yeah, sometimes you just build those tags up too much to where it actually becomes not fun anymore. I know I've had friends that have done that where they're so worried about it being a one shot, yada, yada, they just forget to have a good time. That's the trouble with some of those tags. Or you put so much pressure on yourself to make it one thing, and it's like, well, it's just not going to be that. It's not right. The right year for that, especially when guys draw elk and deer tags. You know, it took forever to draw that tag, but it's just a bad year for it. Like, they aren't rutting, whatever. Weather's not conducive. It's hot. Who knows? There's so many things. And then you're just not having a good time on a hunt that should be one of the best hunts you've ever had. Sometimes that's the trouble with some of those tags, that you just put so much pressure on yourself that you make it not fun. And then you do things that you probably wouldn't do if it was just a normal tag that probably end up hurting you in the long run. Just the way you're hunting sometimes, you go, I don't know. I've done it. I've been with people that have done it. Now I've just realized, all right, if you get the tag, just go out and have a good time. Just get the whole reason you're out there. Just make it worthwhile and just to look back on it and remember, hey, I had a blast. No matter what happens, it was fun. Some of that comes with just putting some numbers on things and saying, oh, this is what I want. I want a 400-inch bull or nothing. I mean, you just forget to have a good time. All you care about is that 400-inch bull. And when you have these cool encounters with 370 bulls, you don't give a shit. That's really a shame.
You know? Oh, yeah, that's terrible. Thankfully, I never get caught up on the trophy thing. Like, I've never really, like, oh, I got to get, you know, X amount of inches or bust, you know. I've never done that, thank God. But I am notorious for putting a lot of pressure on myself for no reason at all. I feel like, and I feel like sometimes people are watching me through a scope, you know. And I feel that pressure, but in reality, nobody gives a shit the frick I'm doing, you know. It's like, you know, and you gotta smack myself around once in a while. I'm like, dude, just, you got this. Go do what you do and, you know, have fun. And if it works out, it works out.
So, yeah, exactly.
But I have been caught up in that a few times. So.
Yeah, I mean, my thing is, like, I still hunt as hard as I can every day, but yeah, if you're worried about the pressure of it and just constantly thinking about, oh, I won't get another chance at it, then you beat yourself up over things you can't control, and then you end up just not having a very fun experience. Most of the time, you just gotta realize it doesn't matter if it's a once in a lifetime deal or whatever. If you don't have fun doing it, it's not worth it. And I've seen that happen a lot on special tags. Yeah, that tag, like I say, that story, my sheep hunt story, isn't like a real in-depth story because not a lot happened on that hunt, but you know, there's things that I couldn't control. I didn't let it eat away at me, and it's just like, all right, can't control it, but what you can control is just going out and having a good time and hunting as hard as you can. Cool. Do that, you'll have fun.
Well, my hat's off to you. Go 20 days as a 15-year-old without seeing anything, or maybe that was your saving grace, maybe. But I don't know. Like, I took my nephew on his. He drew a rifle elk tag last season, and he was ready to hang himself. Like, after 4 hours of waiting, we knew this bull was going to come to this water hole, and we were sitting off of it, and we were seeing elk come and play, and you know, cows diving into this water hole. I mean, it was nonstop all day long. We seen elk. So it's not like we were just sitting there and we were just waiting for this one bull that was, we kept seeing him out in the distance in the flats. And we just knew he was going to come. And sure as shit, he came, you know, last night. And my nephew wasn't able to make a shot because he never stopped moving. And it was a kind of a long shot, and I kept calling him off and telling him, don't shoot. But anyway, the moral of the story is, like, he was like, oh, man, can we go back and go grab something to eat and this? And I'm like, no, dude. I mean, it took us 2 hours to drive back here, and 45-minute hike. We're here. Let's just do this, you know? I'm like,
yeah.
I can't imagine, you know. And he's not the only one, you know. There's probably four or five other, you know, kids around that age that I've taken out and had that same, like, experience where I'm like, there's no way. When you told me you were 15 and you went 20 days, I was like, there's no way in hell. I didn't even think to do that. But
yeah, but I was just so about it. I'd rather be there than anywhere else. That's probably the one screw that's loose in my head, is I just like to be hunting. It didn't matter. If I could be out there for 20 days, that's what I wanted to do. That was almost better than shooting something on the first day for me. That's just how, and I understand. I would never take a kid out and expect him to do that. I just know that that's kind of how I was always built, I guess. That was just my thing, and I liked it, and because of that, I just remember that. Now, today, I probably have less patience now than I did then. I think if I had that same tag today and that was going on, I don't know what I would do. I would probably do the same thing, but I wouldn't enjoy it this much.
Yeah, well, because you know how hard those tags are to come by.
I mean, exactly.
But I could tell you what, you wouldn't go 20 days waiting for a freaking mule deer, you know. Or something that you've shot a lot, you have a lot of opportunity to go do, you know?
Yeah.
At least I wouldn't do it.
Depends on what I knew. If I knew there was a giant buck there and I just had to be, I probably would.
I guess maybe if you had like a strip tag or, you know, or something crazy like that, where you just know there's a 200 inch or somewhere running around or whatever. Yeah, I guess.
Yep.
I guess it's all circumstance, but
yeah. And I've got a sadistic, like, way of picking hunts that I like. And a lot of those hunts, some of my favorite hunts are just going into low density areas where success is low and you probably aren't going to find anything. And then coming out with an animal, those are even like mule deer and whatever. It's fun for me to go into those areas that are tough and not very many people do well, but there's always that chance of finding something a little bit better and you don't run into people. And I just enjoy it. But the reason you don't run into people is because not very many people want to go that 5-6 days without seeing anything. Cause that does suck. You know, I've had a few hunts, like I shot a good mule deer last year in an area where you see 3 or 4 deer per week. It's like, but I ended up walking out with an over 180 inch buck. Yeah. That's awesome. Wow. Yeah.
Cool. Moral of the story. Keep at it. You never know.
Keep at it. You never know. Or unless, but then you could, you never know. You could be like just doing something completely wrong. And then that's the reason you aren't seeing anything. So.
That's true. That's true.
In some instances, it doesn't work.
I guess at this point though, I mean, you've been around and done enough hunting that you know when you're doing things wrong and when you're doing things right.
Definitely.
So, but cool. Well, that was an awesome story, man. Thanks for sharing it with us. And thank you for coming on. You got anything going? You guys got your own podcast going on now too, huh?
There's the Solo Hunter podcast. And then I'm probably going to be launching my own here shortly, maybe by this fall. So I'll keep you apprised to what's going on. If it ends up working out. Yeah.
Nice.
But just looking forward to this hunting season. It's going to be fun. Got some cool stuff planned that really just looking forward to that Alaska trip. And then got some guiding going on. And who knows, there's still a few draws that are yet to be determined.
Yeah. Idaho.
You never know. Things could change real fast.
Arizona deer closes a couple days here.
When does that close? The 12th or something like
12th,
that?
12th, yeah. Yeah,
12th. Yeah, I still got to get in. I don't know what I want to do with that. I'm debating whether I want to go put in my points for coos deer late, like a late rifle coos deer hunt, or do like a late mule deer hunt, or just put in for the strip and get a point. Not sure.
Yeah. Put in for the strip, get a point, and then pick up a leftover tag.
Yeah, exactly. Except those leftover tags are always the wrong time of year for me. So that's the trouble.
You can't archery do that December 1st tag? This year it's November 30th.
This year it's,
exactly. November 30th
yeah.
to the 9th, December 9th.
Yeah, so when I do that, I always have to go like the last few days of that. I've done it once because it was that same. I think we went the last couple days of the season or something like that. But yeah.
Gotcha. Cool.
Cool. Yeah. Right on.
Well,
it was good talking with you.
What's your
first hunt? Oh, my first hunt?
Yeah.
It'll be that antelope tag starting August 1st and then mule deer starting the 15th. I've got a friend from Australia coming over this year to hunt with me, so I'm really looking forward to that. It's fun for me to kind of show some friends, like, oh, this is what I grew up doing. This is, you know, and I've talked about it for so long. He's like, no, I really want to do that. It's just a classic Nevada hunt. So I actually, I'm really, really pumped on that to just show him around. And I think we're just going to, I don't know how we're going to hunt it. I'll probably just show him around for a couple days and then we'll kind of go off and do our own thing. Cause he's got 3 weeks to hunt it. So I think he'll do pretty well. We'll just kind of go off on our own and hunt our own spot and join back up later on in the week or something. So we'll see how that goes. Should be really fun.
Nice. Well, good luck on that. Keep me posted. Like to hear how your season went.
Yeah. Sounds good. I will.
All right, bro. Take it easy.
Yep. Have a good one. Thanks.
You too. Bye.
Hey guys, want to stay connected with the podcast? Check out my blog, johnstallone.me. That's www.johnstallone.me. And you could go on there. On the top right-hand corner, there's a little subscribe box. Quickly put in an email address, hit subscribe, and boom, you're done. There's a lot of great information on there. A lot of posts that go hand-in-hand with the podcast that we do, plus gear reviews, plus we have the signature t-shirts on there, the I Eat Fast Food t-shirts and the Tuesday Coosday shirts. It's a really good way to stay connected with the podcast. And thanks for listening.